Hi, I'm Kate.
And I'm Lori. We've always thought that the most compelling story strikes the perfect balance between an honest look at the mess of life and the humor that can be found in the mess. To be perfectly honest, we don't really know how to live life without both the humor and the authenticity.
Our podcast might be a little bit of whiplash at times. We can spin from hard and deep to humor and laughing on a dime. The hard will be really hard, and the truths we share are the ugliest of humanity. We don't intend to make it seem like it's all fine or to pretty up the pain, but we also know that the joy we found is all the more profound because of the pain.
So we hope you can stick with us through the ugly, because there will also be joy and hope and humor. Welcome to The Ugly Truth About the Girl Next Door.
Hi, welcome back to our podcast, The Ugly Truth About the Girl Next Door. I'm Kate.
And I'm Lori.
And today we are talking about our experience so far with an organization called GRACE, Godly Response to Abuse in a Christian Environment. In previous podcasts, we've talked about an independent investigation that was going on, the church where a lot of the offenders most recently attended, the church that I grew up in, and where a lot of the, you know, ritual abuse and just a lot of abuse happened in this church building, which is Cornerstone Church on Grand Island, New York.
Yes. Not
wild
not
that
Ireland.
We have to say that. Yep. Now. back in August, they decided to hire this independent investigative team, and not really with, you know, there wasn't really like a ton of conversation about that, right? Right. It was kind of like,
but
it was kind of like, then all of a sudden, like, the team was hired and the.
So let me just say, I was hopeful and Kate was not, because her experiences have been that this never goes well, really. But
yeah, there were so many factors, just like so many red flags for me. And, you know, starting with the fact that, like, the lead pastor of the church stood up on the pulpit and made a public announcement that the investigation was going to be starting, which I understand his reasoning for doing that in terms of, like, spending the money that they were going to spend to have this happen, you know, having congregational whatever. But it also just kind of, I mean, again, if you're going to hire a private investigator, you typically wouldn't advertise it, I guess. But then, you know, other red flags were, A, it's a faith-based organization, and not that there's anything wrong with that, but it just felt very much like, one, you know, they're coming at this with, you know, that I was afraid they would be like, forgive and forget, you know, that whole like message that so often is told to survivors in abuse situations from the faith-based community.
So let me just say, we were talking before we even started that we have been inundated by messages from people, mostly women, of course, about the fact that they have so many times attempted to bring abuse concerns to leadership in churches and been ignored, rebuffed, told to sit down and shut up. So, and that has been Kate's experience, is that the church has not shown up and been a support. So perfectly understandably, Kate had no reason to think that this was going to be different.
Yeah. And I mean, just, I mean, even, yeah, there was that. There's also the fact that the church is the payer source, right? They were paying $70,000 for this investigation to be done. I kept asking the question in the preliminary conversations with the investigators, like, so help me help you, right? Like, make it make sense for me that this church that a ton of offenders still attend, people on their board and on their, you know, elder boards and deacon boards who are either offenders themselves or related to offenders, they're coughing up 70 grand to pay these investigators. Make it make sense for me how you are
neutral.
Yeah, neutral and independent the way that you say that you are, because ultimately at the end of the day, the church is the payer source, right? And they kept saying, the way our contract reads, we're independent. The way our contract reads, we're independent. But, you know, that was the cookie cutter phrase, which we will talk about the cookie cutter phrases in all of this.
Yes.
But so we started this investigation. Honestly, I felt very backed into a corner, and we were very careful about how we talked about this on the podcast, because we didn't want to burn bridges that maybe were going to be a path forward. And we're always very careful to, you know, I think that we typically are careful to, you more so than me, take the high road, right? Like to say, like, we're going to give this a chance. We're going to not say things that we can't take back, you know?
Okay. Let me say,
yeah,
you take the high road absolutely in terms of the fallout of this. I want to be very clear. You are very sensitive to, we together are very sensitive to the fallout here and not trying to incite violence, to stir up the community to anything other than we need to put a stop to the abuse and the getting away with abuse. I am more, I think, diplomatic in dealing with organizations.
Yes. Yes. So, 100%.
I want to be fair to you with that.
Thank you. Sure. That's so nice of you. We make a great team, honestly.
We do this well.
Clearly. we're so dumb. Anyways, but yeah, so we were very careful. We did talk about how investigations feel on the podcast. Mm-hmm. If you go back and listen to that episode, we talked about our concerns. We talked about the fact that there was probably a little bit more fear than there was hope, but there was still hope, right? So let me also just preface this with saying, by before the contract was signed with the church, Lori and I met on Zoom with a man. Can I name these people?
Well, the lead investigator and the director.
Yeah. And said, you know, this is not your typical case. Okay. This is human trafficking. This is ritual abuse. This is decades of abuse. This is organized systems and many, 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 many offenders. We're not talking about a skeevy youth pastor in one church. We're not talking about, a couple people in leadership at a church who have done some inappropriate touching. That's not what we're talking about.
We also emphasized repeatedly the current day safety concerns and the critical importance of that being a primary concern and something that was paid attention to as this process unfolded.
Yep. No, absolutely. Yeah. We shared the threats with them. We shared recent current day things that had happened. We expressed, honestly, through tears sometimes, how critical it was our ask was, don't make it worse. That's it. I'm not even asking you to help or to make it better for us or to anything, because it wasn't my choice to have you hired. Please, for the love of God, do not make it worse. And kind of leading into that, I very much felt like a caged animal. Like I could not, there was no way out. If I didn't participate in the investigation, then they write what they're going to write about my story and my experience without me having any input. And if I do participate in the investigation, it's just a nightmare, right? It's having to sit through these interviews. It's handing over sensitive information to people that I don't trust at all and have no reason to trust. So we had these preliminary conversations. Their big claim to fame, a case that they worked that was big in the South was, I think it was a member of leadership of a church where they were inappropriately rubbing the feet of youth. Not good, not okay, but not in the same ballpark. But they signed the contract anyways. They said, we can handle this. We're going to sign the $70,000 contract. So I think it was in September. Did they come?
October.
They came to Buffalo. We met with the lead investigator as well as a contracted investigator.
Former law enforcement.
Yeah. Had like 30 years, experience in law enforcement. And
now, can we talk first? And again, we do reference this in how investigations feel, but Kate and Christiana especially spent weeks and weeks and weeks feverishly gathering as much documentation as possible to be able to present to the investigators to just encourage them to really listen well.
Yeah, it was like a full-time job, literally going to different police stations, gathering police reports, medical reports, making phone calls. There was all these different things of, we destroy our documents after 7 years. We destroy our documents 10 years after you turn 18. We destroy,
We have an episode about that. We haven't posted.
We do. We need to post that. Yeah.
We will.
Literally a month of just like, okay, full, like pedal to the floor. Like we are pedal to the floor. Is that I don't know.
Pedal to the metal.
That's like so old though. I'm not going to say that. Okay. Anyway,
go fast.
All the things. We were working a million miles an hour to get all this pulled together, all of the pieces of information, asking people who had come forward to us through the podcast for their cooperation. Like, hey, so the church hired these investigators. would you give a statement based on the things that you've already told us? We had screenshots of those things. We had all the things.
But our commitment to people has always been, we will not share what you share with us without your Absolutely. Express permission.
Absolutely.
So we went to those people and said, please.
Yeah.
Okay. Not at first. It was after we met with the investigators. So we need to back up a little bit because we did meet with the investigators.
Yeah. So let's back up. So the investigators come to Buffalo and we walk into this meeting, and I got to be honest with you. I was at Christiana's house before we met with them that day, and I was raging, like full on. This is going to be horrible. I hate them already for all the million reasons and all the red flags that I've seen. And I am just like, and we were very, very like, they can have this very tiny folder of information and that is it, because I'm no.
Okay, hold on. We're doing this without an outline, folks, this time,
so which really... it shows.
Because what we left off is the weeks leading into that initial meeting, the insanity of attempting to come up with an agreement about what would happen to
Oh my gosh, report. I can't believe we left that out. So before the investigation even really started, I was very adamant that the final report, so I read through some of their previous final reports, and they contain details of the abuse. So they contain, you know, what type of sexual misconduct, the touching, quotes from survivors, very detailed, explicit details of abuse. I hesitate to use the word explicit, but anyways, details. And I knew that sitting on the elder board of this church, Cornerstone, that hired these investigators was, again, offenders themselves, family members of offenders, people that I did not trust to have those details. And again, we are not talking about sexual misconduct, inappropriately rubbing feet of people. We are talking about explicit, very delicate, horrifying details. And so I was adamant that
we started with a conversation. Honestly, we didn't even start with adamant.
We started with,
can we talk about the fact that, you know, there are people still in leadership in this building who are related to or who are offenders themselves. And it's important that all of this very graphic information mm-hmm. not be put out there for the world to read.
And also not make it into the hands of these offenders.
Right.
Right. I don't need these offenders like getting off on the fact that they can now read the details of their crimes. That's what I was not okay with.
So we tried to have that conversation.
Yeah, it was a very like, just like, hey, can we have a conversation about this? The lead pastor was actually like, yeah, that's fine. We don't like whatever I can, you know, it's not a problem, basically.
Right. I mean, what he said is like, listen, everybody on the elder board doesn't want to read these details anyway. So yeah, for sure. We totally understand that. We can do that. But then we started to get into the conversation of, so who is going to read the final report? Because someone at Cornerstone would have to, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Because they're the payer source.
Right. And they have to make decisions based on what is in the report. So who's going to read it? And then what is the congregation going to know about the outcome? And so it became, obviously, the details had to be ironed out.
Yeah.
So as those details were being discussed, we tried to engage Grace in the conversation of who can write a redacted version of the report for the elder board. And the response was, we don't do that. That's not how we do things.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, that's not our protocol, which that's one of the cookie cutter phrases that we've heard over and over and over again. That's not our protocol. So no. Interestingly though, now how many months later, looking back on that conversation, and I like, this is just coming to me. And again, we don't have an outline. So is that, they said no to us, and then Cornerstone asked them to do it, and they said yes.
Oh, that's true.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Again, explain to me how it is that you're independent and neutral when I, the victim and the survivor, am asking you for help in doing something that's going to ultimately keep me safer and ultimately trust you more with my experience and my information, and you say no, that's not our protocol. But then the payer source who's paying you $70,000 asks you and you say, yes, we're going to do that. Right.
So it was weeks,
of
very frustrating conversations, trying to get this narrowed down and ironed out, ultimately getting to the right place that there was a specific person who would have the report, that one or two people would be the only people who would read the whole report. A redacted version would be available to the elder board and a summary for the congregation that yeah. Grace was going to produce.
But like you said, weeks, multiple Zoom meetings, epically written emails, you know, going back and forth of just, you are not getting this. It's literally like talking to a brick wall. Mm-hmm. But we got the day that the lead investigator emailed me and said they got the agreement was actually the Friday before they were supposed to be here on Tuesday. And we had been in negotiations about this for weeks. And I was actually like, okay, all right, like, let's go, you know?
So I want to highlight the fact that it is stressful enough to be going through this process without having to argue again over things that should be really obvious. It should not have been that complicated for people to understand, for Grace to understand that they signed on and that they had a role to play in this. It should not have been that hard. And it added so many layers of stress and frustration that was unnecessary. But so we finally got there and that was great. It was lovely that we finally got there and we got there before the investigators came and then they came.
And then they came. And again, I was raging. We walked into the room and the lead investigator started sharing her story and her, you know, she's a survivor herself. Again, not the same level of trauma, but definitely, you know, shared her story and was really open about that. She was really kind and way more down to earth and
less churchy.
Yeah, just really expressing to us her frustrations with churches and kind of understanding, you know, where we were coming from. The other investigator who had 30 years experience of law enforcement was looking at some of these police reports going, this is garbage. You know, and just really recognizing that like this,
you've been failed.
Yeah, that the system has failed many times and wasn't trying to defend, you know, his brothers in blue or anything like that. Like really, really understanding and really, really, like really spun us on our heels. Like
and he found you funny.
Yeah, he found me funny. And you guys, like, I'm so funny. Like, I don't – people who, like, I, like, make – Patrick makes fun of me all the time because I'm like, well, that person didn't think I was funny. He's like, bye. Like – So
he got the idea that humor has a place in these hard things.
Yeah.
And that was very disarming.
It was. Yes. It was their whole, everything was very disarming. And the whiplash of that alone was like, I came in here like guns blazing, like hot. And like, you immediately like brought that down. So like props, right? We spent 4 hours with them that day. Giving them all, you know, all the information that we could possibly come up with, all of the high level stuff, all of the intertwined connecting things, as many, disclosures that I had written about specific abuse, answered questions about the specific abuse, like 4 hours of just grueling conversation.
Things you were not planning to give them.
No, not at all. Right. We had a folder of what they can have and a folder of what they can maybe look at. And then a bunch of stuff that was like not a shot. And we ended up giving all of it to them. Again, they were very disarming. So then, you know, I literally left that meeting. I called Christiana. I said, they are not what we thought they were. Like, we're really encouraged. We're really like, this could actually be something that helps. Like, this could actually be a really good thing. They seem to really understand the safety piece of it. You know, the investigator who is law enforcement was super concerned about the current safety threats and wanted, and I mean, he actually said to me at one point, if your safety means ripping up the final report, then that's what we'll do. Like, he was so adamant that like that is top priority. And so that is when we started to kind of then go to a lot of the people that had come forward to us and say, hey, like, could you add your voice to this, right? Like, could you
share your experience.
Yeah. I encouraged other survivors, other victims, other people with information to come forward. You know, Christiana being one of them, she has her own abuse experience that she shared on the podcast. And I encouraged her like, hey, can you add your voice to this? You know, again, she had planned on coming into that interview, guns blazing. And then because I was disarmed by them, very much encouraged her not to do that. Like, tell them everything. We can trust them. So that was our first experience with them in Buffalo. They leave Buffalo after a week of being here. And before they left Buffalo, they had said, you know, we really feel like law enforcement needs to be involved. And we were, you know, there's so much stuff with law enforcement. It takes so much time and I don't have a lot of time, right? Like I say that so like dramatically, but like truly like I need stuff to happen right now because I can't continue to live my life with threats showing up anywhere and everywhere that I'm at in my mailbox. You know, anywhere, everywhere. I can't continue to need an escort every time I leave my house. That's not a livable life.
So we started the conversation even in that first visit about, well, okay, so if Grace comes to a place where it is evident that law enforcement, the information we have should be handed off to law enforcement, we started talking about how that could look in a way that wouldn't make things worse for Kate.
Right.
We started way back then. But then in between the first visit and the second visit.
Yeah. So can I just pause really quickly though and talk about the thing that I know about these offenders, because I literally lived, I mean, my father trafficked me. He is the one I grew up with him living in my house. Okay. My family members were involved in this. I knew these men very well. And I also have ingrained in me their words. And so every time, multiple escape attempts in seventh grade when I tried to disclose, in high school when I tried to disclose, in college when I tried to disclose, every time I've made an escape attempt.
Or even when they thought you might.
Yeah. The backlash was, see, nobody will ever believe you. When the school that I disclosed to in seventh grade called my parents instead of CPS and the whole thing, you know, got shattered to bits, in the dark world, then the message that was sent through physical, sexual, and horrifying abuse and torture was, nobody will ever believe you. See, you told, you tried to tell, and they didn't believe you and you had to then walk it back. Every single time, that has been the message. Every time an organization has failed, that has been the message. When the chapel, the pastor, the counseling pastor stood up on stage and said that they were, you know, he was happy to be in community with my parents. The next day we got threats indicating that,
see, look,
that message. Yeah. See, you lose. These are sociopathic offenders. They're sociopathic offenders. It's a game to them. It's a mental chess game. And this is part of the game. So what I expressed very clearly to the investigators was, you don't understand if it even looks like you couldn't handle it, or you tried and failed, or it was too much, and now you have to step out. If you are not clear and convincing about why that's happening, they get the message. See, another, like, it never works out for you. You lose every single time.
And now you pay the price.
Right. And again, that's not my perception of what they think. That was ingrained in me through abuse and torture and the words that they said while they were doing those things to me. So it's not my perception. It's a fact. So we made that really clear. They left Buffalo, and what happened? We had a Zoom call. That was
confusing. Right. We thought we were like plunging forward with a plan. There was a lot of disconnects there. We managed, I think, to work that out. But then in the middle too was when the offender was allowed to be at Trunk or Treat at Cornerstone.
Yes. Yep.
And so that created a whole storm of conversation about, well, again, this was another place where Grace, we thought that it was reasonable that they would be involved in conversations about what's going to happen with named offenders. This was another period of huge frustration between us and Grace and the church, because we were trying to say, okay, we're looking for information about what is going to be the plan for named offenders. If Kate gives a disclosure that is considered credible, again, Grace keeps saying, we can't say all of the things until the very end of the report. That's what they, again, we don't do it that way. Until the end.
It's not our protocol.
Right. We don't do it that way until the very end. Okay. But for them to be able to say, okay, well, you know, we're hearing this disclosure based on our experience. We consider this to be a valid disclosure. This is a very serious allegation. What is going to be the intention about what happens to those offenders? We need to know that. We mm-hmm. need to talk about that. We need to talk about how that process unfolds. That was, again, weeks and weeks of going around and around and around in circles about how that could happen and who should be involved in that and what they could do and what they can't do and what their protocol is. And that this, again, is not like normal thing, like your protocol. They do. Anyway, all of the things. It was, again,
it was once again talking to a brick wall. It was like every email I sent was responded with a cookie cutter response that was not even close to what I was asking. It was every Zoom call we had was flat. I can't even describe the level of frustration in dragging them along this path with us. Please, for the love of God, all we have asked of you is don't make this worse, right? And yet you are, like, you're not getting this, right? So finally, we say they were scheduled to come back to Buffalo for more interviews. We had been emailing back and forth, and it was, they were just not getting it. And the lead investigator sends me an email and I was like, so are you still okay with meeting with us when we're in Buffalo? And I was like, yeah, let's set that up, because clearly this is not able to be communicated through email. And also, you keep telling me that you can't make decisions. You have to talk to your bosses. You have to talk to your bosses. You have to talk to your bosses. So I'm going to need, in that interview, in that conversation in Buffalo, I'm going to need you to get your bosses on the phone. I want to talk to whoever it is that's going to make these decisions, because this game that we're playing of the back and forth is not going to work for me. Like, this is my life, people. Okay. And again, not a skeevy youth pastor situation, actual safety threat concern. Okay. So they come back to Buffalo. We meet with them. She literally gets their CEO of the entire organization on the phone, on Zoom. And I'm like, okay, perfect. We're going to talk to this guy. He's not an attorney. A lot of them are attorneys who do the investigating. He's actually a licensed, what is he?
I think he's a social worker.
LMSW. Yeah. Fine. So I'm thinking, like, this is going to be better because, number one, he understands the, like, the trauma-informed aspect of it. He's not going to talk to us like an attorney. He's going to be, no offense to any attorneys out there, we love you, we need help, but I'm just kidding. But I had this feeling that, like, he's going to get it more. I'm not going to be talking to a brick wall because, my God, this is the CEO of the entire organization.
Who's so supposedly the best of the best in the faith-based
world. The best
world.
Of the best, right. So he gets on the phone and we go into all of our concerns, why we're concerned, the frustration, the struggle. Again, we don't come out of the gate hot. We literally have an outline in front of us written out how we want to say what we want to say. And he is the densest brick wall of them all. I mean, literally, I'm looking at this guy on Zoom and I just cannot believe what I'm hearing. I cannot believe the same cookie cutter responses that are coming out of his mouth. I literally am like, there are no words to express. There are no words to express. But again, we keep hitting it. We keep going around the exact same points. And his responses continue to be, well, I have to talk to the team. I said to him, sir, you are the CEO of the company, and you are telling me that you can't make this decision. You cannot make a simple decision as to how you're going to advise this church. And again, the response kept being, well, we'd have to talk to the team. That's not our protocol. We would have to talk to the church and work with them to figure out if that would be, you know, reasonable. Again, the church is the payer source.
And again, no real acknowledgement of, I have felt right along that there's not really been an acknowledgement of the current day safety
concerns. No, he actually looked at us directly on Zoom and said to me, Kate, are you concerned about actual physical safety?
Or emotional.
Or mental health safety? I'm pretty sure that's when I put a dent in Lori's bathroom wall, mm-hmm. Because I could not even believe. We had shared police reports, current day police reports that we have filed. We've shared the actual threats that have been coming. We've shared the fact that there are people that show up at my house, video clips of that happening. We shared the current safety threats, physical safety threats of right now. And this guy has the audacity to ask me if it's a real safety threat or if it's my mental health. And he's supposedly the best of the best in the trauma-informed investigative world. Are you effing kidding me? So, Yeah. So it just was a, like an absolute, like the most frustrating conversation ever. So we ended the conversation with him because we got exactly nowhere. His response continued to be, we'd have to work with the church on that. We would have to talk to the team about that. Cookie cutter responses and just absolutely insulting, atrocious, you know, I mean, appalling.
Stonewalling.
Absolutely. Complete stonewalling. Yeah.
Like you've not been listening at all.
No, not at all. And there was really no, I mean, we had been on the phone with him for over an hour and it was really just like, we aren't going to get anywhere. I mean, this is it. So we hang up with him and, I said to the investigators, okay, so at this point then I'm pulling everything back. I want my statements back, which by the way, back up. I'm entitled to, under contract with them, a accurate transcript of my interviews with them from back in October. They sent us those transcripts and they were all wrong. All wrong. I mean, had multiple people in the room that weren't even there.
It was very obvious that they had used some kind of a transcription thing and nobody had edited.
Right. So it came to us and it was like speaker number 8. And it was like, there wasn't even 8 people in the room. How is there a speaker number 8? They had flipped like things that I said with things that Lori said, things that I said with the one investigator.
They were trying to get Kate to sign off on those as they were valid.
Accurate. Right. Yeah. I was supposed to sign an affidavit basically or attestation saying that these were accurate. So I sent it back to them in October and said, 1000% no, this is not even close to being accurate. I'm going to need a new accurate transcript. You have to edit this. So now they're back the week before Thanksgiving. We have this meeting with their CEO and we kept saying, we still do not have accurate transcripts of the interview. How, like, you can't even do your job correctly in that way, right? Like that's a clerical thing and you can't even do that. Like, oh my God. So I said to the investigators, I want everything back. I want the transcript still of my interview, but I want it back. I want you to send it to me and it's mine and you do not get to use it in the final report. I do not give you permission to use anything that I've given you or said to you in the final report. I don't sign off on any of it, which I thank God hadn't because it was all wrong. So we're done. We're done here. And again, these two people were very like, we're sorry that that's how you feel. We really did want to help you. Disarming, you know.
When it comes to them, we're saying disarming like they were being manipulative. I don't think either one of us think they were being manipulative.
No.
They really do want to help these two particular people.
Yeah, I mean, I honestly was like, do you guys want to like quit this horrible organization and come and work for us? Not that we can really pay you, but like, you know, like.
Not yet.
Not yet. Wait for it, our nonprofit. No, but like literally it was like, we don't not like you. Like I generally, I didn't dislike, and it was this feeling of just absolute letdown of like, this sucks because I don't hate them. And yet I don't know, like I'm just so much at a loss, but we pulled everything back.
Well, we talked through all of that.
Yeah.
We left that meeting saying we're pulling everything back, but we will talk about continuing on if we can get the correct answer from Grace about how to proceed with named offenders.
Right.
So.
And the one older investigator who.
He's going to love that you described him that way.
He just said he's old, but he is. But I do believe that these two individuals wanted to help. We talked through all of that and we wanted to trust them. We really did.
We wanted to at least be able to stick with the process. Trust is a funny word.
Yeah. We wanted to have a path, we had a path laid out and whatever. So I don't know, a week later, maybe, the investigator came back to us and said, Grace, the team has decided that, yep, we are with every valid disclosure that you are able to give that we consider credible. We are going to recommend to Cornerstone that offender not be in their building for the duration of the investigation. And, you know, according to her, the Cornerstone agreed to that. Cornerstone was actually supposed to send us an official I went back and looked at those emails. They were supposed to send us an official statement through Grace about that was their intention. Mm. They never did that, but
and I want to comment too on, we also repeatedly said it is very important that we get a heads up if that process unfolds. So if you are going to confront an offender and tell them not to be in the building. We need that in advance, or at least like in the moment after you're done having that conversation for safety reasons.
Exactly. Right. Yep. Absolutely. And yeah,
that didn't happen.
No, not at all. So again, we were thankful that they went to bat for us. They talked to the team. They talked to this. Again, you know, every time I use language on this podcast, people will yell at me. So this bozo of a CEO who, like, oh my goodness, I can't. They went to bat and said, yep, this is going to be our recommendation. They continue to say, we do not control what the church does. This is our recommendation.
Over
to
and
them.
Over, we heard that. We know.
We know. We get that. Nobody's asking you to come here and force them by law or anything like that. We know that. Again, it's a cookie cutter phrase. We can't control what the church does. We can only make a recommendation. My God. Yes. Thank you. So they made the recommendation, and there were what, three offenders who we had already given accurate, like very credible, very like all the things in the How I Know episode.
I think there were two out the gate.
Okay. Yeah.
Anyway, just remember. For whatever accuracy. Don't hold us to that specific detail, people.
Like it's so much, okay. But anyway, so that process unfolded. They asked those offenders not to be in the building, and that was good news.
Yeah.
You know,
I think we had a path.
Yeah. We thought we had a path. Like, okay. So now we can, every time something happens, you know, every time we give a valid disclosure, like it puts the offenders on notice, again, their safety and that putting the offenders on notice that they
are taking this seriously.
Yeah. That there's somebody out there who is looking at all the evidence, who's seeing that this is valid, who is considering these credible, valid disclosures from a quote neutral standpoint. Right. And yeah, now that's, you need to know that they're being put on notice, and we felt good about that. Like, great. What happened next?
So then we made our statement that if threats continue to come, Kate would be naming names.
Yeah.
And that happened.
But we were utilizing.
Right. We're trying to put those together.
Yeah. The
disclosing
path
to Grace, addressing it with Cornerstone, and then naming a name publicly as if a threat came.
A lot of that was actually also because there was like so much, like people were saying that there was an offender who had been asked to leave the church, then showed up at church. And so it was just like, you know what, we're just, and it was very hard for us to get like, how do we know if that's happening? If like, we're not, the people don't even know who this person is. Like it was just, there was just so much going on with that. And so it was like, and again, I'm at wit's end, people. I am at wit's end, right? I'm getting threats all the time, left at my mailbox at work, left in places that are just, I mean, all the time. It's just every single day is a safety planning effort. And so it was like, I don't know what else to do. We're at wit's end, right? So we did that. We started naming names, and the one disclosure at ASBAC who we had named publicly, we had given a disclosure, very detailed, very accurate, you know, credible disclosure to Grace. They then informed the church that he could not be on the premises. We made his name public. And it was a lot. I mean, that whole process is a lot. We'll do an episode about that, but
then there was another threat.
And, you know, the threats kind of kept coming
faster.
Yeah. Faster, more, whatever. So then there was not really any further conversation with Grace.
No.
And out of the, well, okay. So
we
let me back
another
up.
Name.
We named another name. There was conversation about whether or not they would be handing it off to law enforcement. But you know,
there hadn't been further,
there hadn't really been further conversation. No. It was just like, yeah, like we would, you know, not be opposed to that. Like, yeah, there's a whole thing with that. Right. But we get an email on Friday at 4:45 p.m. So
listen to that very carefully.
Yeah.
Friday at 4:45, we get an email, not a phone call, not a Zoom meeting, not in the middle of the week even.
Yeah.
An email,
which, you know, anyone who has ever had a job understands what an email at 4:45 p.m. Right. on a Friday means.
Don't call me.
Yeah. Like send and close my computer, you know, we've all done it, but in this situation, no, not acceptable. So we get an email at 4:45 on, Friday afternoon.
So we get this email Friday afternoon saying that Grace, because they are recognizing the seriousness of these allegations and how credible Kate's disclosures are, they believe that it is necessary for them to hand off everything they've gathered off to law enforcement,
which we always knew was a possibility. But again, the conversation had been had right along with, okay, so if your investigation needs to be put on pause, because we're handing it to law enforcement, because literally we've been telling you since before you signed the freaking contract that you weren't equipped to handle this. So if that ends up being the case, we are going to need you to make a very clear statement as to why that's happening, right? We're going to need you to be able to make a statement to the church who's paying you $70,000 for this investigation, stating we find these allegations to be very convincing and very credible, and therefore this needs to be a criminal investigation. This needs to be handed off to law enforcement.
We also said repeatedly, this needs to be a conversation.
Yeah. Yes. You, again, because of the safety threats, because of the way that these offenders think, again, my experience tells me any organization that kind of throws their hands up in surrender of like, I can't do this, sends a very specific kind of message that says, see, nobody believes you. And see, we win again. And see, it's too big and we're too smart. They believe that they're untouchable, right? And this level of passive action or lack of action sends that message again very clearly to the offenders, which then falls back on me, right? It puts my safety at further risk because now these offenders feel emboldened. They feel like they've won. They feel like they have nothing to be concerned about. They feel, yeah, all the things, right?
So we say, please, dear God, just don't make it worse.
Yep.
And so instead of a conversation or a clear plan laid out, it's an email at 4:45 on a Friday. Mm-hmm. And oh, then, by the way, there is no plan made for even a follow-up call so that we can't even have a conversation until Thursday.
Right.
By the time we could have a conversation with Grace this past Thursday, like yesterday, mm-hmm. The church had already pulled down all references to Grace from their website, except for the like, I don't know, wherever they would have linked the survey.
Yeah.
But it said the survey is now disabled.
Yeah.
So again,
the survey is a whole other thing that maybe we will, maybe we won't get into, but we kind of have on social media. Go back and look at some of our social media, but they effed that up too.
So the message was out there that some status had changed regarding Grace. Mm-hmm.
But not a clear statement as to why. Just a, we're taking a step back. So we had a Zoom call. Again, we said, we expect to be able to speak to you on Monday morning. They came back Monday morning and said, we have like this 1 hour time frame today.
I think it was 30 minutes.
Yeah, that didn't work for us at all. And the soonest that they could then get together and talk to us was Thursday. So we met with them on Zoom yesterday. Again, I said, everybody, I want the CEO. I want the director of investigations. I want both I want everybody. So they all get on this call.
I'm getting like this feeling.
I'm
in
literally
my stomach
sweating
right now
because I'm so angry. Oh. I know. No, I know. I can't even, there's so much rage. Mm. So we get on this call and, you know, we kind of go into the whole thing of how inappropriate, how wildly unprofessional sending that email at 4:45 on a Friday was, that we all know exactly what it was you were doing there.
Okay, let me just say, I started out this conversation basically saying, you know, I just want to open it up for anything you want to say.
Do you guys have anything to say to us?
Because I was really hoping that they would do the appropriate, responsible, victim-centric thing and say, we are so sorry. An email at 4:45 on a Friday, there's no excuse for it.
Because we had followed up that email with a very, like, this is all the ways you did this wrong. So they already knew that we were hot, right? So Lori says, is there anything that you guys want to start with?
Crickets. Nothing. Absolutely nothing.
Legitimately crickets. So then I said, okay, we'll start. That's fine. That's fine. We'll just go into it then. We give them all of the things, right? And at this point, like, full disclosure, I'm hot. Like Lori is keeping composure and I am really trying. And I think I did as best as I could, but I am hot. Like really, like this is so unacceptable in my opinion.
No excuse.
Right. And then every time one of these asshats opens their mouth, I get hotter because again, we are talking to a brick wall. There is no moving forward through a brick wall. And that is exactly what this is. I've never met people that are so dense, honestly. And that's really saying something because I have met some very crappy people, clearly. And this is, wow. So we go into the whole thing, you know, inappropriate, wildly unacceptable. You've put my life at further risk. You've really just, it's open season now in my life. Because
this is how these people are, the offenders are going to interpret this.
Right. And the CEO has the audacity to look at me and say, how would you know how they're going to interpret this?
And even when I said, the victim is the expert in their own experience. And how, who would know better than Kate how these people think?
He said, well, yes, in her experience.
Her traumatized experience. Yeah. Her perception would be that, of course, because she's has a history of trauma.
So let's unpack that, okay? So this organization claims to be the most victim-centric, the best of the best, the $70,000 investigative firm in the faith-based community, right? They are trauma-informed. They are victim-centric. And yet, when we say the victim is the expert in their own experience, they say, well, yeah, your traumatized perception, putting it right back, the onus right back on me, right? I literally, it's like, I can't even, and then when I like react to that, then it's, they just are like, well, no, you're, we can't even.
This is not victim blaming. Don't be ridiculous. This is not victim blaming.
I said to him, I've never heard this level of victim blaming before in my life ever. This is absolutely just like unbelievably. Yeah. He also said, you know, it, again, your, it's your perception of what they would think. You know, you have no way of knowing that. Again, I'm explaining to him, you don't understand. Like, the, like, yes, I do, because they've said the words to me while they're inflicting pain on my actual physical body. So yes, thank you, Pete, but like, no, I know. Like, there's no words. We also address the fact that we still do not have accurate transcripts of the interviews. None, right? And he says to the lead investigator, do we have those? And she says, no, we don't. We still have to edit them. So again, you can't even do your job. They kept repeatedly saying, we kept saying, okay, damage is done, but now what do we need from you, right? We need to now have you, one, make a statement to the church saying the clear and convincing evidence that there is, you know,
very serious concern.
Yes.
Here.
And so therefore it is being handed off. And they kept saying, that's not our protocol. We don't do that. So then we said,
but then I got into, okay, so I understand that that's not how you typically do things, but we're talking about a safety concern here. So are you basically saying that the safety concern can't trump your protocol?
Right.
I mean, is that what we're saying here? Really? Is that really what we're saying here?
But here's the really interesting part, which again, hopefully you're seeing a theme here. The CEO looked at us and said, we would not be in a position to write a statement like that unless the church asked us to. And I said, there it is. The church is the payer source. You are not independent of the church. They are paying you $70,000 to conduct an investigation into their church. I am the victim. I am the survivor asking you to please, on my behalf, make a statement of the things that are going to keep stating things that will ultimately keep my actual physical safety, you know, better. And you're saying no. And then on the flip side, you're saying we only would be able to do that if the church that hired us asks us to do it. So you need to go talk to the church, he said, and ask them to ask us.
So at the end, we did get them to agree to coordinate without us in the middle with the church about what could come next, but it was like it was a concession, like they were doing us a favor.
Yeah, we made it very clear to them that they never, ever, ever should have signed this contract. They continued to say that that's not true, that they were more than equipped to do this. Clearly they're not, because they're putting themselves on pause. We did at the end of the day tell them they have 2 weeks to give us back everything that we've given them. They have 2 weeks to get us accurate transcripts of the interviews, as well as all of the documentation, all of the disclosures, all of the things that we gave to them. We need all of it back, all of it. And literally they looked at me and said, so you, if you do that though, you're saying we can't use your statements in any further investigation?
What investigation?
Right.
What are we talking about?
And are you serious at this point? You think I'm going to trust you with any of this? And they said, well, it would be very hard for us to do an investigation without your statement. Well, then you shouldn't have signed a $70,000 contract that you weren't prepared to handle, which we told you prior to signing the contract. So for the world at large, Grace Ministries has 2 weeks from December 15th to get me those documents. 2 weeks is what they've got. I'm also
no, wanna... mind you, they've had since October.
Yeah, they've had since October. Okay. Yeah. Oh, and by the way, in the attestation that I was supposed to sign, I was actually only given 7 days to sign it, or else they would just use it. But for the world at large, they have 2 weeks. For the world at large, also, if you have any experiences with dealing with grace, if you're a victim or a survivor who had to walk through their process of hell or had to go head to head with these people and had any kind of experience, good, bad, ugly, whatever, come talk to us. We would love to hear it. Honestly, we would love to hear what it is that the world has to say about them.
Ugly truth about the girl next door at proton.me, P-R-O-T-O-N.
Or just click on our website.
Yeah.
You can email us through there. But yeah, so anything that anybody wants to share, any comments, we're open to hearing, of course. We are pushing forward with our goal. There's strength in numbers, and we believe that. I mean, we really have seen just unbelievable support, which we are really blown away by. Like, I have no words, honestly. I know I keep saying that, but like, I just truthfully don't.
And law enforcement takes time.
Like, law enforcement
takes
time. We
are still moving forward. This is not to say, I mean, honestly, what Kate and I have said, we were never counting on grace. It would have been nice if grace could have been help.
But we had one ask of grace.
Yep.
Do not make it worse. I'm not counting on you to help. I'm not even asking you to help. I'm asking you, please, for the love of God and all things holy, do not make it worse. And they did. They have. So that is our episode on grace. I'm sure there will be more to come, as I'm sure that we are unfortunately not done with this nightmare of them.
We'll let you know how it goes in 2 weeks, whether those transcripts are in hand.
Yeah. Stay tuned.
If you or someone you know is stuck in a trafficking situation and needs help, please reach out to the National Human Trafficking Hotline by calling 1-888-373-7888 or text HELP, H-E-L-P, to 233-733.